10,186 American Tower Corporation, south of Route 22, 6,411 feet east of Route 22C. A variance from lighting requirements for a telecommunications tower. Gentlemen, I have the, if you look at what I've given you, if you just look down here, you can see this is 186. Mm-hmm. 10,186. For any questions, you have a exhibit there.
Is he going to testify?
He will.
Your name and place of residence, please. Give us a street address, please. And you swear a firm testimony you give shall be the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening. My name is David Hutt. I'm a local attorney here with Wilson, Howbrook & Byard. This evening, I'm representing American Tower Corporation, the applicant here who is seeking to amend one of the board's prior decisions. With me is Tim McDougall. He's an employee of American Tower Corporation, and he'll introduce himself in a few minutes. In order to orient the board to this application tonight, we prepared an exhibit notebook, and the first exhibit is the board's decision dated January 23rd, 2006, in which Singular Wireless was granted a special use exception for a communications tower at Long Neck Village. This site is located off of Church Lane, which is a small road located just off of Long Neck Road in Millsboro. The board's decision was granted on January 23rd, 2006, and thereafter, Singular Wireless sold the development of this tower to American Tower Corporation. When construction began on the tower, American Tower Corporation realized that there was two stipulations or conditions that were a part of the board's approval that it could not comply with, in addition to being in compliance with the FAA and FCC. When they realized that, they spoke with me, and we wrote a letter to Lawrence Lang, and that letter is dated October 26, 2007, asking Mr. Lang if, in his capacity as a director of planning and zoning, he could amend the conditions or stipulations relating to the lighting of the tower on his own. Mr. Lang thought the most prudent course of conduct in this matter would be to bring it back before the board, as was done in a similar case. The members of the board may remember that a short while ago, actually it was December of 2006, I stood before you with American Tower Corporation, and we basically presented the same request that we're going to be presenting tonight. There was another communications tower that was approved with the exact same conditions regarding lighting, and we appealed to the board and asked the board to amend those conditions, which the board did. Mr. Lank asked that we follow that practice again, and hence we're here tonight on this application. Tab 3 in the exhibit notebook is the actual variance request or request to amend the decision in case number 9379-2006, and that includes both the minutes from the January meeting which approved the telecommunications tower, as well as the FAA's determination of no hazard to air navigation dated October 25th, 2007. At this time, I'm going to ask Mr. McDougall from American Tower Corporation to come up, and I'll ask him some questions and then let him explain to you some requirements that the FAA has and the FCC has and the difficulty in complying with the conditions and stipulations that were placed on this communications tower by the board's prior decision. Mr. McDougall, if you could, what is American Tower Corporation? What does it do? Just to educate the board quickly.
American Tower is essentially a company that you can view them as a company that owns vertical real estate. We build and acquire towers, and what we do then is we rent space on them to Singular and AT&T and Verizon's of the world. That's essentially what our role is. We build the towers, and then we rent space on them.
About how many towers does American Tower Corporation have across the United States?
We have approximately 20,000 towers across the United States.
What is your position with American Tower?
My position is I am an FAA FCC compliance manager for American Tower. That's a position I've been in since 2001. Essentially, we have a team of seven people at American Tower, and our sole function is to make sure that we have all correct filings with the FAA and the FCC. We do that in order to ensure that they have proper knowledge of our towers and that they can in turn pass that information along to any pilots that may be flying around our structures.
Does American Tower, what is its policy on lighting towers? Does it have a policy?
We do have a policy, and it's to stay strictly in accordance with the guidelines set forth by the FAA and the FCC. The FAA and the FCC have rigorous requirements regarding tower lighting. Their requirements are essentially based on the height of a tower and its location. And as I just mentioned, we file all of our towers with the FAA. What that means is we have 20,000 filings with the FAA, minimum. And we have to live in accordance with what is specified in that. Each one of them has a lighting requirement, or it may not have a lighting requirement. But whatever is written on that FAA determination of no hazard, American Tower's policy is to strictly abide by it.
Is American Tower required by some law or regulation to file every tower it has with the FAA and FCC?
No, we're not in fact required to file every single structure we have. Nobody is. But American Tower's policy is to play it very conservatively and make sure we get all of our information before the FAA and the FCC, because they're the final ones who assess the compliance of a tower and whether or not it would be a hazard. So we make it a policy at our company to forward all of our information on our towers, their location, their heights, to the FAA, and in turn the FCC. And we give them a chance to rigorously review the proposal. And whatever they come back with for a decision, whether or not we can build the tower, to what height we can build it, and if we have to light it or not, whatever those conditions are, we abide by them.
With respect to the tower at Long Neck Village, the tower that we're here discussing tonight, did you follow that practice and seek an FAA determination for that tower?
We did. That tower was filed with the FAA, and we received back from the FAA a determination of no hazard, and what they wrote in that determination is that based on this tower's location and its height, that it would not present a hazard to air navigation and that lighting would not be required for it. It's essentially far enough away from any local airport that the FAA viewed it as not being a hazard to air traffic.
If I may, while you have the exhibit notebook, Mr. McDougal was kind enough to condense it down into lesser sheets of paper, which would more precisely bring us to the parts of the advisory circular that are relevant to this. If I may hand them to the secretary.
Yes, please.
If you could, Mr. McDougal, what... I'll wait, I suppose, till those are handed down to the board members. Or they could turn to tab 3B in the exhibit notebook. You were just referring to the determination of no hazard to air navigation that you received from the FAA. And is there a part of that that is more relevant than the others to the discussion tonight?
Well, the parts of this that are relevant to this particular tower, it's the information contained in the latitude, the longitude, and the heights. That's the essential information that we present to the FAA on all of our projects. That tells you where the tower is and how high it's going to be. Just below that, highlighted in yellow, which you should see, actually there's a four-page letter at the front of that handout, and just after that you'll see the determination of no hazard. You see a section on the front page of the no hazard determination that's highlighted in yellow. That's the important part for what we're discussing here now. What that comment is telling us is that the FAA reviewed the proposal and they came back and said, based on their evaluation, marking and lighting are not necessary for aviation safety. That's particular to this spot. They go on to say that if marking and lighting were achieved on this tower, that they would want it done so in accordance with FAA guidelines. Should we go over to him?
I'm sure. And what would the, if you were going to voluntarily light this light in compliance with the advisory circular, what would those requirements be?
Well, the first thing I do is I refer to the advisory circular. And I have a few pages of that in that handout for you as well. If you flip past the FAA determination of no hazard, you come to a page that looks like this. It has another highlighted in yellow paragraph on it. Mm-hmm. When you get to that paragraph in the advisory circular, that's where the FAA makes it known how they want a tower to be voluntarily lit. And if you read that paragraph, essentially what it's saying is the object may be located with respect to other objects or terrain that the sponsor, in that case, in this case it's American Tower, would feel that increased visibility of the tower is necessary. It then goes on to say, if the sponsor desires to voluntarily light the tower, that they do so in accordance with proper FAA guidelines. At that point, the question becomes, what are proper FAA guidelines for a tower such as this one? And if you turn over one more page, again, there's a couple paragraphs highlighted in yellow there. In the right column, you'll see a paragraph for top-mounted obstruction lights. And what this paragraph is telling us is that, excuse me, for structures that are less than 150 feet in height, two or more steady burning lights should be installed on the tower. So what they're telling us is that if the tower like this one here is below 150 feet, that all the FAA recommends in cases of voluntary lighting is top-mounted, steady-burning red lights. The next paragraph that you see highlighted at the bottom of the page, that brings up the subject of intermediate levels of lighting. And what this paragraph is telling us is that the number of light levels to be installed on a tower, it should be done so in accordance with Appendix 1. And if you go to the second-to-last page in this handout, what I've included here is a page that looks like this. This is Appendix 1 for tower lighting. On the far left, you see an example of a tower there that's 150 feet or less. And what the FAA calls for is just the top-mounted lights. It doesn't make any provision for intermediate levels of lighting. So for cases of voluntary lighting per FAA guidelines, this is the way the FAA would review a proposal like this.
What is the, in your experience, what is the impact of lighting a tower inconsistently with what the FAA or FCC requires?
Well, first and foremost, I think I would answer that by saying that, as I've already mentioned, American Tower files everything with the FAA. And part of the reason we do that is so that we get all of our information on file with the FAA and the FCC, and we get back from them predictable responses. The FAA and the FCC review all proposals in essentially the same manner. And in turn, what we get back from them are, in some cases, some fairly predictable responses. The FAA and the FCC, for most towers, only have 3 to 4 different lighting schemes. The importance of that fact is that pilots operating in any given area, they're very familiar with those 3 or 4 different types of light systems. When you stray from that and you start putting something else up, it can and does cause confusion with pilots. I can tell you from my experience what often happens is if there's a tower that is either malfunctioning or it has something installed incorrectly, it prompts calls from pilots to the FAA, to the FCC, and to American Tower. And they file these reports saying there's something working incorrectly on that tower. And in fact, if per the guidelines or per the stipulation on the county code, if we were to follow that rigorously, we would be installing a system that does not meet FAA guidelines. It would cause confusion with pilots. And somewhere down the road, it would result in calls to regulatory agencies, the FAA, the FCC, and American Tower. They'd be reporting a tower that has a, they'd be thinking it's malfunctioning, but in fact it wouldn't be. They'd just be encountering something that does not fit the norm for FAA guidelines.
The two requirements or stipulations that the board placed on it, the first one that we're asking be removed or amended is the requirement of lighting, soft lighting at the top and at 75 feet. Basically, under the, if you're going to voluntarily light it, what lighting would American Tower be able to put on the tower and be in compliance with the advisory circular from the FAA?
What we could do is install the top-mounted, a double obstruction top-mounted steady burning red light. That would meet the FAA guideline. In fact, I mean, we could get away per guidelines with one light, but there are also double obstruction lights. Essentially, there'd be two steady burning red lights up there. And that would be our choice. That would keep us in accordance with the guidelines that we follow every day. And it would be putting a system on that tower that pilots are familiar with.
The second requirement or stipulation that the board put on its special use exception was that there be lighting installed that was soft lighting except for an inclement weather when it would switch to a strobe. Is it possible for American Tower to comply with that stipulation?
To date, there is no FAA-approved system that does that. There is no trigger mechanism that would switch a system designed to operate as steady burning into a strobing beacon type of light. The lights that are made available by approved vendors, approved suppliers, they either function as steady burning lights or as a strobing beacon. They are not combined. So that's something that we could not even get if we wanted to at this point in time.
The bottom line, is it possible for American Tower to comply with the special use exception stipulations and also the FAA's requirements at the same time?
No. There are conflicts between them that really can't be resolved. I've briefly outlined what the FAA approves for this type of system, and you can see it on this depiction here. I mean, this is a representation of it, a visual representation, but it's also in the language that what they recommend is a top-mounted, steady-burning red light. I can't make that agree with what is in, I can't make it agree with what's in the county code or the stipulation. They just conflict.
American Tower's request tonight is based on the testimony that you've heard and the materials that have been submitted to the board, that the board follow the FAA's determination of no hazard to air navigation, which was included in both Mr. McDougall's handout as well as at Exhibit 3B, and that no lighting be required on this tower consistent with the FAA advisory circular. If the board is unwilling to completely remove the lighting requirement, American Tower's request is that it be required by the county to comply with the FAA's voluntary lighting requirements, which would be the red lights at the top of the tower. We stand ready for any questions that any board members may have.
Okay. Are there any questions from members of the board? Mr. McCabe?
No, sir.
Mr. Burton?
Yeah, are you considering spray pilots?
Spray planes and stuff? Is there any open fields, crops around that area where you're putting this tower?
That is something that is considered in the review that the FAA completes. And this type of lighting system that we're mentioning here, that would fully take them into consideration. It would give them ample warning.
With a light on top?
Yes, it would.
Yes. I don't have a problem with light on top for that. We do a lot of crop spraying around here.
Do another, like you say, all over the United States, right? You're the American Tower.
Pardon?
Your American Tower is all over.
Okay. I'm from American Tower.
Do they pretty much adhere to the FAA standards?
Absolutely. That's a company requirement.
We've got a little different here in Sussex County. Is that what you're saying to us, that the ordinance is a little different than?
Yes, it is different. It's basically telling us to add levels of lighting.
Okay.
At places where it's not needed per FAA regulations, and it's even if it was a tower that required two levels of lighting, which this one is not, the second level of lighting is not being positioned in the regulation, the county code, at the same spot the FAA would. So they're adding levels of light and they're putting them out at a place where the FAA would not. That's the conflict. That's one of the conflicts.
Okay. The color coding also is the conflict also, the red
that
and
is
white,
the county code. That is the county code. The stipulation was a little bit different. It again mentioned putting an extra level of lighting at a place where the FAA would not, and the mechanics of the system that the stipulation is calling for, it does not exist. It's not manufactured by any approved suppliers, any FAA-approved suppliers. Essentially, what we're talking about, you have steady-burning lights, and then you have flashing ones.
Right.
The stipulation is intermixing them. It's asking us to put a trigger in place on the tower that would turn a steady-burning one into a strobing one, and that equipment just doesn't exist.
Right.
Any questions? No. Okay. Hearing no further questions. Are there any persons here that are in favor of this application? Is there anyone here in opposition to this application? Chair, hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that we amend our decision from the previous case and approve with voluntary lighting.
Okay, do you have a second to that motion?
Second.
I have a motion by Mr. Mills and a second by Mr. Workman that we approve case number 10,186, amending our decision to voluntary lighting. Okay, all those in favor of the motion, give the usual voting sign.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carried. Your case is approved. Case number